triple the bacon, double the cheese, and good heavens, double the fresh, never frozen beef. And what's this? A Wendy's Giant Junior Bacon Cheeseburger with nuggets, fries, and a drink for just $5. Run, run to your nearest Wendy's.
At participating Wendy's for a limited time, meal includes small fries and a drink. Not valid in Alaska and Hawaii. Fresh beef available in the contiguous U.S., Alaska, and Canada.
When I was little, I didn't talk for a long time. I was sensitive to lights and sounds, so I built secret hiding places where they couldn't get in. Sometimes, I do the same things over and over, until one day, I found out I had autism. My family got me help. Slowly, I learned how to live with it better.
Early intervention can make a lifetime of difference. Learn the signs at autismspeaks.org/signs. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
It's Tony Mack and the Triplet. With your hosts, Antonio McBeth and Aaron Triplett, specializing in the world of sports.
I think they're the best team in the country.
Covering your favorite teams.
Alabama wins! Touchdown over!
And talking about whatever the hell they want.
Because he's a good coach! The good talent wants to play for him!
Absolutely not. This is ridiculous.
Now, here they are. Tony Mack and the Triplett.
Welcome in, everybody. Tony Mack and the Triplet. That's right. We're going Facebook Live for all of you that follow the Ump on Facebook, at Ump Sports on Twitter, at Tony Mack UMP, at A Trip Tennis, or at Tony Mack Triplet is where you can follow us on Twitter. If you are listening on the radio, go. If you're at home, if you're pulling up the app at home and doing us a favor by listening to us there, get on Facebook. You can check it out. Facebook Live. It's not coming directly out of the phone audio. It's good audio. We've got this thing rigged up to where you're hearing exactly how you're hearing it on the radio, but you get the pleasure of seeing us. So figured we'd try this thing out and see how it works. If we have to, record a promo, maybe Aaron can show you exactly how he does that. But, it's great to be here this Saturday morning. We get to do a show right before and in a huge college football kickoff. All of the good games start at the same time, which we'll talk about that. But bigger than week one, for sure. Probably bigger than last year's week one. The biggest week one in college football history. Ed, what do you feel about this week one? And where does it stack up to all the other, or this week two, where does it stack up to all the other great non-conference football weeks?
I think it's a really good week. There's not a lot of rivalries that are going on, but there's a lot of games that have a lot of implications. A lot of games between some highly ranked teams. Of course, you got another top five matchup for the second straight week with Ohio State taking on Oklahoma. You've got Auburn and Clemson going at it, which is should be a really good game. And then you've got, other ones like Georgia and Notre Dame. It's one of the first times that an SEC team has traveled to South Bend in a long, long, long time. And I think it's the first regular season. The first meeting ever between Georgia and Notre Dame.
I'm not sure about that. We can look that up and check that. But
I just saw, I say that because I was seeing when I was watching the Chiefs Patriots on Thursday night, they did an advertisement because, NBC carries Notre Dame's games. They did an advertisement that said for the first time ever.
It's a big matchup. It's a huge matchup. It's the first time in my lifetime I've seen it. I know that much.
I don't think I've ever seen in my lifetime Notre Dame play an SEC team in the regular season. the last time I remember them playing one, of course, Alabama, when they were blown out, and then when they were blown out by LSU in the Sugar Bowl a number of years ago. That's the last couple times I remember seeing it. Oh, well, they played LSU in Music City Bowl.
Yeah,
and
beat them. Here's the problem. All right, a lot of great games you mentioned. Ohio State, Oklahoma, which obviously I'm ready for. Even Boise State, Washington State, the late Pac-12 after dark, the nightcap there, that's going to be a good game.
Those are always – whenever Boise State is playing, you're going to get a good football game.
Stanford, USC, Georgia, Notre Dame. Here's the problem. Clemson, Auburn. That's the earliest kick out of these big games, Clemson, Auburn. It starts at 6 o'clock. And here's the problem. 30 minutes later, Oklahoma, Ohio State kicks off. And at the very same time, Georgia, Notre Dame kicks off. And then an hour later, Stanford, USC kicks off. Boise State, Washington State's at 9:30. That's your Pac-12. That's the guilty pleasure game. When everything should be done, when college football should be over for the day, and you feel like you need to process everything that just happened, you got this sneaky good game on at night. And I love, even though it always gets talked about as Pac-12 After Dark, that extra game you get to watch, whoever schedules these games does such a good job, because it's always a sneaky good and fun game to watch. Because nobody really cares out here for the Pac-12, but that's your guilty pleasure game. You watch that game because you know you're going to enjoy this football game.
Occasionally you'll get one of those games where when Stanford a couple years ago, I mean, they're the ranked 14 now, but there was a couple years ago where they were just better than most of the Pac-12, and where they would just beat the stew out of somebody on a Pac-12 After Dark game. It's midnight and Stanford's up 30 points on for Oregon State or something, and you're over there wanting to hit the snooze, and actually, I'm probably already snoozing, but that one, Washington State, Boise State's going to be a good game. USC and Stanford is going to be a good game. Of course, Boise State and Washington State, spread on that's 10 in the favor of Washington State, which I think is a little bit high.
I do, too.
We'll get into that a little bit later on when we start picking games, but it's a really good week. I'm really excited. I'm really excited for Georgia and Notre Dame. I really think that that's going to be a really good game.
Here's the best idea for this week, though. I mean, it's going to be hard with all these good games to not make them all start at the same time, which change one of them. We'll deal with the other three being at the same time, Clemson, Auburn, Oklahoma, Ohio State. That was inevitable. Those were going to be late. Those were going to be your primetime games. It's hard to change that. But the one game that would be it screams, play me at 2:30, Georgia-Notre Dame. Georgia-Notre Dame.
The same thing.
That screams 2:30, Notre Dame and Georgia taking the field in beautiful fall sunlight there. Well, I guess it's late summer, but it feels like fall. Which, shout out to whoever controls the weather these days. Fantastic football weather. Last night, me and Arky called the Randolph Westminster game, which Randolph won 14-7, fantastic game, pulled away in the fourth quarter. The football weather the weather leading up to today has been phenomenal.
It's like it's flipped a switch, because it was 90 degrees last week, and then you get one day this week, and all of a sudden this cold front moves in, and was immediately turned to 70 degrees, and it's felt really, really good the past couple of days.
All right, Aaron, well, we got football games to talk about and pick, including the big games that we just mentioned, the SEC. We got a couple interesting matchups in the SEC today. We've got a lot to get to. We've got our fun little segments. So we're going to go and start right now with our Crying Jordan Face of the Week. All right, Aaron. Good music choice. Let's start with you. Give me your Crying Jordan Face of the Week.
Well, my Crying Jordan Face of the Week goes, it's a shout-out to my tennis background. So, as you know, the U.S. Open has been going on the past couple of weeks. About to come to a close. Of course, a lot of the big men names dropped out with injuries, but Federer and Nadal were still in it. Federer didn't play that great of a tournament, struggled all the way through. But he was in the quarters, Nadal was in the quarters. They were on the same side of the bracket with a chance to meet in the semifinals. And as many times as those two guys have played, they've never played at a U.S. Open, never played against each other at a U.S. Open. And a fan came out and said that he paid, I think it was $2,300, for courtside seats to a potential Nadal-Federer match in the semifinals. And then Federer gets beat in four sets by Del Potro in the quarters. So my Crying Jordan Face of the Week was the courtside fan who paid $2,300 to see a Nadal-Federer match that didn't happen. So congratulations for that. $2,300, I guess not well spent. But that was my my Crying Jordan Face of the Week.
Now, you mentioned it's a good one. The picture's even better. Go check that out. Tony Mack UMP, Tony Mack Triplet, or at A Triplet. If you go to Tony Mack Triplet, if you go to that Twitter page, you can, in the bio, it's got mine and Aaron's Twitter handles. Just follow us there. Go check it out. Aaron tweets his shirt of the day, which we're going to talk about, and we tweet our Crying Jordan Faces of the Week. Aaron, that was a great, great choice. Now, did I hear this right? I can't remember. I read it on ESPN Stats and Info, so I know it's correct, but I can't remember the context. It was a couple days ago. It was when Federer got beat. They've come within, I think, 6 or 9 times they've come within one match of playing each other. Now, is that in any major, or was that just the U.S. Open?
That was just the U.S. Open. Because they've come, like I said, they've never played at a U.S. Open before, but I think it was nine times, and it was one of them getting beat in the semifinals or quarterfinals or something like that. So it's happened. It's probably, I don't think it's ever going to happen if it wasn't going to happen this time, because both of them are. Yeah, 32. I think Nadal's 31, but Federer's 36 now.
Fed's got to be older than that.
He's because he's of the big four, he's by far the oldest one, because he won several. I think he had won about 6 or 7, 8 majors by the time that Nadal broke onto the scene, and then I know he just turned 36. Yeah, last month, about a month ago, he turned 36 right after winning Wimbledon. And I think Nadal, of course, who's going to play Kevin Anderson from South Africa in the final, is going to win. And so after about several years of Nadal and Federer dominance where they would go back and forth, they're both over 30 years old and will have won all four majors this year. It's just incredible.
All right. Well, let's fire it back up, because it's my turn. My crying Jordan face of the week. A lot of honorable mentions we could have done this week. Earlier, we could have done Kevin Sumlin, A&M.
I really considered doing Kevin Sumlin.
I did too, but I figured, you know, they'd be expected. We could have done Sumlin, A&M. We could have done Butch Jones, Tennessee, Georgia Tech, Ted Roof, the defensive coordinator over there. We could have done so many things.
Roof. I'm just going to laugh at that. After from his stint in Auburn, just going to laugh at it.
We could have done, obviously could have done that game. But there are so many other things, that lower profile things, and some people have probably heard about that story you talked about. I didn't hear about it till this morning. So I'm trying to bring something in that's hilarious, insensitive, and maybe something not everybody heard about. I'm sure most people on this station heard about it, but it is the Atlanta Braves. My crying Jordan face of the week is the Atlanta Braves, and really just take your pick. Number one, they're 62-78. They're third in their division. That's not why I'm putting them on here. They're playing. Number one, they did a fantastic thing. They did an amazing thing by offering Hurricane Irma refugees, the people fleeing that hurricane, they offered them free tickets to a Braves Marlins series. You know, everybody trying to get out of Miami and get out of Florida. If you come to Atlanta, you get to go to a free game for your team. That's awesome. The bad part, the crying Jordan face of the week part, is their music choice. The PA guy that gets paid to play music, and apparently this song was on their home playlist, Rock You Like a Hurricane. Let's sink in for a minute. People that have come over that you've given free tickets to, coming directly out of Florida, running from Hurricane Irma, get to hear you blare Rock You Like a Hurricane. Now, mind you, you suck. Number one, you're not rocking any. You suck, which I believe the Marlins just beat the Braves last night 7-1. You suck. But number two, I get that it's on your home playlist. That's fine. You play that playlist every time you're at home. You know that song's in there. You know the good thing you've done by giving hurricane refugees free tickets. You might want to go double check the playlist. Now, they've come out and apologized, and they've pulled that from the playlist. Now, I'm sorry. That had to, at some level, that was intentional.
I don't know about intentional, but yeah, somebody didn't totally think that through, and it's amazing to think, you know, Texas just got hit by this Hurricane Harvey, which is the most costly since Hurricane Katrina back in 2005, and Hurricane Harvey's so devastating, we're never going to see one like Harvey again for a while, and Hurricane Irma's like, hold my beer. Like, here I come, and like, they've evacuated the south of Miami, and it's supposed to come, I mean, it's going to hit the majority of the southeast.
And it's supposed to hit, so I mean, games of all kinds of games have been canceled, and obviously the least important of things going on with a hurricane, but it's a serious issue. That's why, like, somebody at some level, someone was thinking about that. I'm not saying they looked at it and said, oh, we got to play this. This would be hilarious. But I guess the PA guy, like, sees it coming up. And, like, I, at the very least, you know, his face as it was about to play was, like, they knew. This didn't just catch them by surprise. It started playing, and they were like, oh, crap. Like, someone knew that this was going to happen, and they just didn't know how to handle it, which it's easy to know how to handle. But on some level, in some degree of the mind, that had to be intentional. But I don't think it's intentional to the fact where, oh, this will be funny, which the whole situation, I'm not trying to make light of a huge disaster going on. It's kind of funny. It's kind of funny. But that there it is. There's the crying Jordan face of the week. Aaron, why don't you go ahead, since we're on Facebook Live, why don't you go ahead and introduce the other segment? We don't have music for this one. You guys voted for it. You could vote for it every single week on Twitter. The Twitters I've given out several times. At Tony Mac Triplett, at A-Trip Tennis. Aaron's shirt of the week voted on by our fantastic listeners. Aaron, shirt of the week, buddy.
My shirt of the week this week after actually there was three. The choices this week were Maryland, Colorado, and South Carolina. And Colorado and South Carolina actually split and tied the lead voting, and I broke the tie myself and chose the Colorado Buffaloes. But it was only because we had that big story last week where I was talking about how I thought I had lost this particular shirt, and I did a shout out to my mom asking her if she could find it, and of course it was where I live, and I had just misplaced it, and which does not shock me one bit.
Yeah, you said you hit a treasure trove of shirts.
Well, when
you?
I went back, this was after I had found this shirt. I went back to so my mom is having a garage sale today. Go check it out, by the way, you local listeners. I'm sure that you could find some quality gems. Anyway, so she's having a garage sale, been cleaning out a lot of old shirts, and she finds a few of the old team shirts I used to have, and she says, I thought you might want these, so I went digging a little bit more, and ended up finding several. And a lot of them are smalls, which, of course, the Stanford shirt that I wore the other week is a small. I'm not a very large individual. I typically think of myself as in between sizes, in between a medium and a large. If I ever have a doubt, I go large. But some of these shirts are smalls, but I'm going to try to fit in them anyway because, like I said, I have a ton of shirts and I collect all these team shirts. And I'm thinking about, you know, organizing them, grouping them all into a closet of their own. But I found South Carolina, I found Penn State, I found a Texas shirt. Now I've got two Texas shirts. One of them's got the college seal on it. The other one's got a Longhorn on it.
Why don't you go ahead and hand those to me? I know what to do with
those. I'll have to wear that. Put Texas on the poll in a couple of weeks.
Oh my goodness. October 14th, maybe. Red River.
But I don't have an Oklahoma shirt, believe it or not. And
I've got a few. So
I figured that you'd have a few, but I need. Like I said, I have, and if the shirts don't win, if the polls, like Maryland and South Carolina, will cycle back around for sure, because I don't have that many, but they will cycle around.
Oh my goodness.
For sure.
I know what I'm voting for. If you put up Texas on your poll during the or before the October 14th Red River rivalry, I'm voting for the Maryland shirt. I would love to see that. Would be the perfect troll, an Oklahoma fan making you wear a Maryland shirt the week they play Texas. That'd be fantastic.
Well, I had I put my Maryland shirt this week for that reason, for the game they had against Texas last weekend, which was really impressive. It was one of the more impressive performances of the week. Maryland really really surprised me. They played a really good football game, and their starting quarterback Pigram or whatever is that his name?
Pigram.
Yeah. Pigram. Was he out for season?
Yeah, I believe so.
That's really he had a heck of a game, and it's disappointing to see that happen.
Yeah, it was a great job by the backup quarterback.
Yeah,
he came in
and scored a touchdown at the end too. But they really took it to Texas. If it wasn't for, you know, a punt return touchdown and a blocked field goal return for a touchdown, you know, Texas struggled, especially on defense.
That was a wild game. That reminded me of the game they played at Oklahoma State last year. When I think in the first half there were three blocked extra points. Between the two teams, and it was just a crazy back-and-forth game. Ultimately, I think both ended up in a Texas loss, which Thank God. We can all sleep easy on that one. Tom Herman, they're back. The Longhorns are back, baby. But just
that reminds me of what
just not in the win column.
Joe Tessitore said last year again in the Notre Dame game when they won. He was like, "Texas is back," and I think they win five games again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, there it is. Colorado, the shirt of the week. They play Texas State today at 1 o'clock. I don't know if that one's going to be on TV, and I don't know if you want to watch that one with all the other good football we got going on, because although we've got big games on tonight, there are some really good.
36 on that game.
Dude,
the spread's only 36 on the Colorado-Texas State game.
There are a lot of great SEC matchups earlier this afternoon as well and this morning, so we're going to get to those. We might be able to touch on last week a little bit after we might be able to get away with that. If we touch on these SEC games first. So we're going to take a break, and then when we come back, we're going to get into the SEC games this week. Pick an SEC game of the week, which shouldn't be hard to do. I've already got one in mind, and we'll give you our picks on those. That's all right here on Sports Radio 730 1039 The Ump. This is Tony Mack and the Triplet. Welcome back, Tony Mack and the Triplet. Bump music a little loud there. I don't care. I love our bump music. I would say our bump music is second to none, but I did start working in the mornings for Dale Jackson, and you say what you want about his politics. I really don't have an opinion on any of that stuff. His bump music is phenomenal. All right. You brought it to my attention that it would be a good story to tell before we get into these SEC games. If you guys are looking on Facebook Live, I'm trying to monitor it over here. If you're checking it out on the Ump Sports Facebook Live page, if you notice that the picture is up and down, but my phone is sideways at the same time, here's why. My phone doesn't...
It's been on a journey.
That's to say the least. My phone won't flip anymore. It won't flip. It recently got hit so hard that it won't flip. When I hit the unlock button on the side, it takes almost 5 entire seconds for the screen to light up. And it got hit so hard that it knocked my predict-a-text back on, something I turned off almost 2 years ago when I got this phone. And I haven't had it on in almost 2 years. It's back on. You can't turn it off. That's how hard my phone got hit. And the screen's totally undamaged. The case took a couple scratches, but here's what happened. A couple weeks ago, I'm getting old. I'm past the party stage, I guess, in my life. I'm almost 26. I'm an old soul, I guess you can say. So for my bachelor party weekend, I just wanted to get my groomsmen together and have some fun. And my best man had the same idea. And he was like, you know, and Aaron is included. He is a groomsman in my wedding. And he was like, let's just go to Six Flags. Let's just spend a day at Six Flags. That's a great idea. So we get there, and we go to the Goliath, and there's a lot of foreshadowing the first time we went onto the Goliath, because it was the first roller coaster we did when we got there. And
we did the Scorcher first,
the
and then we walked over there. Yeah.
The second one we did, we're getting up to the Goliath. We got our gold pass, of course, so we're breezing through the line. And I look at Tanner, and I look at Aaron, and his brother Kevin. They have shorts with pockets you can throw stuff in. I'm wearing basketball shorts. I realized I messed up. So I said, hey, you know, will you hold my wallet? Will you hold my keys? Yeah, I was like, my phone. I need somewhere to put my phone. I don't see any cubbies over there. And I use the cubbies. I utilize the cubbies when we go to Six Flags. The cubbies are my best friend. So I look at Tanner, and I said, hey, man, I need somewhere to put my phone. I need to put it over there. And there weren't really cubbies. It was just a place you could put your drinks. And I was just going to set my phone there. He was like, no, man, keep it in your pocket. It's not going to go anywhere. Okay, cool. He was right. I held on to it. We went and rode a bunch of rides. We took a break, and then we went back to ride more rides. Well, the Goliath was the second to the last roller coaster we rode again. Of course, we're going back to the Goliath now. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Six Flags Over Georgia, but the Goliath is one of the best roller coasters you can ride, and it's huge.
It's pretty terrifying.
Oh, my gosh, and, it's fantastic.
Well, see, I like roller coasters, and I told you guys this. I don't love roller coasters. I like them. I'll ride them. I'll have fun. But with Goliath at Six Flags, when they first opened, I loved it. It was smooth, it was fast, everything I loved about it. And then,
we're not getting
as I've gotten older, I'm all about the safety, and I'm such an old person, but I'm all about safety and security. And the only thing that's keeping you in on Glide, there's not like a backup seat belt. There's just that pad that clicks down over you, and you can almost, if it doesn't latch, like if it doesn't latch far enough down on your waist, you kind of come out of the seat just a little bit. And we rode it for the first day. It's the first time I'd ridden it in probably 5 years, and Antonio was sitting next to me the first time, and he said he looked over and he saw true terror on my face.
We'll get to that in a second. I'm glad you brought that up. But number one, it's an adrenaline. It's a theme park. It's adrenaline based. The less safe you feel, the more fun you're going to have. That's how I look at it anyway. So anyway, we go back to get on the Goliath, right? And I haven't had a problem with my phone all day, and we're in there. And I for some reason, I keep putting my hand on my phone to make sure it stays in my pocket. And it's me and my brother and I think Tanner at this point.
I skipped out on the last one because I had some stomach issues. I had some stomach issues after eating that theme park food. So, yeah, so, I skipped out.
So we go back up there, and I don't necessarily feel like it's falling out, but I have my hand on it just in case because I feel like these seat restraints are kind of pushing up on my phone. So I'm holding on to it. We're getting to the very end of the ride. And it's camera time. So I, of course, throw my hands up. I'm smiling. Put them back down. Don't think to check my phone. And I don't know if you've never been on a roller coaster. The worst part of being on a roller coaster is when they stop you. On the fastest and the best rides, you come to a screeching halt. They throw you forward, and then you fling backwards back into your seat. We get off the roller coaster, and I realize that's when my phone fell out. Fell off the roller coaster. Gone. Done. So I go down. I tell Tanner and my brother, they didn't believe me. I went down and I told Aaron, Kevin, and everybody else, and they didn't believe me. And I was like, no, it's seriously gone. I was trying to stay in a positive mood so we can enjoy the rest of our day, and we'll worry about it later. Well, my brother, bless him, was having none of this. The hero of the day, none of it. He was like, here, put your information in on the Track My iPhone app. So I do, and we notice that it's behind the roller coaster. We believe it fell into a roof. Behind the roller coaster, and obviously we can't go back there. We go up to the security station, and they're saying that they have somebody who comes in periodically to check behind roller coasters for lost items, but they don't do it every day. They're probably not going to do it until either the next day or the day after that. So, you know, I had to go online. They wanted me to go online and give my information on there instead of filling out a form there and do it that way. So I said, you know what? Let's just not worry about it. Let's go on. Well, my brother, again, having none of it, continued to stay tracking the iPhone. And what I'm assuming, it fell onto a roof and then fell off that roof eventually. And someone brought it back up front. Right before we left, my brother checked again. And someone had brought my phone up front to the security station. So I went up there and I got it. And it was unscathed. The screen still intact. It fell from a roller coaster. Roller coaster. So, excuse me if I don't share your pain. Having to view my phone not being able to flip, because I'm just excited that I still have a phone.
It's a miracle that it's on the screen right now. It was literally a miracle.
Tanner commented on Facebook Live, the raising my hand emoji. That's him, the bad influence, telling me to keep my phone in my pocket. But okay, so there's that. Now, on the Goliath, the first time we get on the Goliath, I've never... In my entire life, first time I got my brother on this ride, I found out he kept his eyes closed the entire time. He was younger, whatever. This time, this beats that out by a long shot. We're on the Goliath, and we're having fun. Behind us, in my row, it's me, Aaron, and I don't care who else it was. Me and Aaron. This is the highlight of the ride right here. Everybody, we're screaming, we're having fun. I hear Aaron beside me. I'm not looking at him at this point, but I hear him beside me screaming. And it's not fun screams. It's not fun screams at all. He is not enjoying himself, is what you take by hearing this scream. And so then I think and I'm smiling and I'm laughing. I'm like, oh, he's, you know, a little first-time roller coaster jitters. He hadn't ridden a roller coaster in 5 years. You know, it's starting to get to him. This is awesome. I look over, and you would think that someone has a gun to his head because he is screaming so hard, and in between screams, mind you, if you're watching on Facebook Live, in between screams, when he would breathe in to scream again, he would lean all the way back and go and then just throw himself forward and terrified. You could see this vein in the temple of his head better than you can see me right now if you're watching on Facebook Live. He was not having a good time, which made my time all that much better. It was the funniest thing.
we had to ride the Goliath again, not because I didn't have a good time doing it, but because I was just so intrigued, and all of my focus was on his face, because he was, and then we get off the ride, and he was like, yeah, that was really fun. And no one else but me knew what had just happened on this roller coaster.
It was terrible.
No one else knew. We're getting off. Everybody's looking around like, oh, that was so great. Oh, yeah, it was a good time. I miss that roller coaster. Reminiscing on good times. Let's go see the picture. And I keep telling everybody urgently, like, we need to go look at this picture now.
I was actually excited to see the picture myself, but I was thoroughly disappointed because the picture
was
taken too late. They had taken it when we were almost, it was like the, because it's always at the end, but it was the last like little like hump at the end, and I was like breathing a sigh of relief and had like a kind of like a smile on my face, really was what it was. They took it too soon. If they had taken it literally probably about 10 seconds earlier, they would have captured pure fear in a pic, in a photo.
I'm telling everybody this, and they're kind of brushing it off, and I'm telling them, like, you, I'm dead serious. I saw, like, the Lord Jesus Christ in his eyes. Like, he was dead. Like, Aaron was terrified to the point of death, and we get up there where I'm leading the pack. I'm trying to get down to see this picture immediately, and we get down there, and it's nothing. It's the biggest smile I've ever seen. He's smiling. He's got the biggest smile on his face. So no one really believed me, and then we went on it again later, the time I dropped my phone, or it was another roller coaster we went on. And he sat next to Tanner. And Tanner finally got to see the fear.
I think that was, it was either, I think I rode next to Tanner on was it the Daredevil dive?
Possibly.
I know he rode next to me on that, what used to be the Ninja, the Blue Hawk now. And that might have been it when he saw the fear. But that Daredevil dive coaster, which is the only coaster at Six Flags that I had not currently ridden at the time, I'm reading the comment too that my brother just put on our Facebook.
My brother's screams before the ride. My brother would get on the ride to terrify people before the before the roller coaster started. He would the best time was when we were on the Superman. He was sitting next to me on the Superman, and if you guys aren't familiar with that one, it straps your feet in and then tilts you like this, like almost face down to where you're flying like Superman. And this girl to the right of us, who was next on the ride, pulls out her phone. And my brother looks at her and says, are you taking a picture of me? She says, no, whenever you guys flip up, I'm going to take a video and show my friends on Snapchat or whatever how it flips up. He said, oh, okay. So as it's starting to strap our feet in, he knows it's coming. And you see the flash on her phone. It starts the video. And my brother just... scream.
And not just the screams, he would like twitch. He'd be like, like that.
The funniest experience, the best experience I've ever had at a theme park. Ryan's fake terror and Aaron's real terror. So we're gonna get to it now. There's our Six Flags story. Now we're gonna jump into it. Some of these SEC games this weekend. All right. Northern Colorado, Florida, canceled. It was supposed to get moved to noon today. Canceled. Hurricane Irma's wiped that game out. Kentucky, Eastern Kentucky. Now, Kentucky struggled a little bit last week against Southern Miss. Ended up beating them by a touchdown, I think. Do you see them having any problems with this one? Because I've got Kentucky.
Yeah, I think they're going to win pretty easily.
Yeah, same. UT Martin, Ole Miss. Don't know why this
is. The Skyhawks coming to town.
Don't know why this is happening, but easily Ole Miss.
Ole Miss.
All right, better question. Fresno State, Alabama. Does Fresno State get on the board?
I think they get on the board.
Really?
I think it'll be tough, but I could see them pulling three out off a turnover, maybe, you know, a fumble.
Now, when Alabama plays these games, I know they had that touchdown. Western Kentucky had that touchdown against them, but when Alabama plays these games like this, almost every year in September, they have a team like Fresno State or like Western Kentucky who will go down first in the first quarter and kick a field goal, and everybody will post a picture and look and be like, oh, look at this, and then Alabama will put 45 straight.
Now, the spread is 43.5. Do they cover that 43.5?
No, because I don't think Alabama scores 43 points.
I think that they – I was actually going to – I'm thinking about 45-3, which wouldn't be covering the spread because that's 42. So I don't think they cover that 43.5. They come close, but I don't think they cover it.
I'm thinking maybe 38 or something. And I don't mean any disrespect. I'm not saying Alabama doesn't put up 45 or something like that because they're not very good. With Brian DeBall there – you really saw the urgency and the great backs they have back there, the great rotation, they're going to run the football. And running the football eats up time. So
it sputtered a little bit last week.
Yeah, but they're playing one of the best.
They're playing one of the best defenses out there. But I think they come close to covering. But 43.5 is a lot.
We'll get to that game in just a second. I don't want to call that one yet. Tennessee, Indiana State, the Vols, obviously going to bounce back here. Now what we're doing, we're just going through some of these. Although we're picking the obvious games right now, just letting you guys know who's playing today in the SEC.
Tennessee, you'll get a win, and
Vanderbilt and Alabama A&M. You guys went to high school with a guy that goes to A&M, correct?
Well, Kevin did. We went to the same high school, but the starting running back at Alabama A&M is a kid by the name of Jordan Bentley. People in the Huntsville area have heard of him. He broke all kinds of Gunnersville records. I think he's third all time in the entire state of Alabama in rushing touchdowns. Just a really good, like, stand-up guy. He was a sophomore, and my brother was a senior when he really came onto the scene, ran for about 1,600 to 1,800 yards that season when Kevin was a senior and he was a sophomore. But came on last year with some injuries and ended up starting for A&M and leading all freshmen in the nation in FCS and rushing. Really impressive. But he's playing. He'll be playing against Vanderbilt. They took a tough loss to UAB last week. They'll get beat again, but I hope he plays well. It's nice to see him see somebody from a small town like Gunnersville play on a pretty big stage.
Absolutely. And LSU plays Chattanooga. Cole Kublik calling that game. Their game got switched to that one tonight at 6:30. You can watch that one on the SEC Network. Sorry, Cole, probably going to be tuning into a few other games. Texas A&M Nichols, I don't really see a problem with either one of those. LSU, A&M probably going to win. And then Mississippi State, La Tech, is there any kind of intrigue there with that La Tech offense?
I think there is. I think Louisiana Tech is actually one. I predicted them to win the Conference USA. And I think that Skip Holtz has done a really good job since he's gotten there. They've got a real potent offense. They're going to put up some points today. And I think that, Mississippi State's favored by 9.5, almost 10. I think they'll cover that, but I think Louisiana Tech puts up points. I think
high-scoring game.
High-scoring game. Fitzgerald, of course, is going to be – he'll put up 400 total yards.
Was it the La Tech game that Johnny Football was in a few years ago that was really high-scoring? Was it La Tech, La Monroe? I think it was La Tech where A&M played them. And, oh, my gosh. I think they barely beat them. They squeaked by and beat them, but it was like – 59 to 40.
Yeah, Louisiana Tech can put up some points. So they'll put up some points today, but yeah. I think Mississippi State will pull away.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we do, we're going to cover some other SEC games like the Georgia-Notre Dame game, South Carolina-Missouri, and even Auburn-Clemson, TCU-Arkansas. So we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we'll jump into those. This is Tony Mack Triplett, Tony Mack and the Triplett, right here on Sports Radio 730-1039, The Ump. Welcome back, Tony Mack and the Triplett. Getting you ready for leading up to kickoff. We've gotten goofy stories out of the way. We've gotten our crying Jordan face of the week out of the way. Now we got the kind of obvious winners of these SEC games out of the way. So now we're going to get into some of the other really intriguing matchups. And I'm really not sure where to start because there's two really good games. One matchup that involves a ranked team in TCU playing Arkansas in Fayetteville. But to be honest with you, the SEC game of the week that I want to go with is a game that has to do with two SEC teams. It's South Carolina-Missouri. That's going to be a really, really good game.
It's going to be a really interesting game. And South Carolina, of course, surprised a lot of people last week getting that win over NC State. Certainly surprised me. Missouri had to put up 70 points, but they also gave up 43 to Missouri State. So some questions on defense for Missouri. Jake Bentley had a big game for South Carolina. I like South Carolina in this one to beat Missouri.
Initially, I did too, but and I think I'm still going to go with that pick. But there's just so many things you have to think about when after week one when you've seen other teams. You have to make this assessment based on them playing bad opponents. Missouri, you look at Missouri and you're like, wow, that offense put up a lot of points. And if you score 73 on a little guy like that, your offense is pretty good. You're going to score a lot of points on somebody. that's good. So you look at them against Missouri State, wow, a lot of points, but they gave up 43. So initially you're thinking, well, they're going to go up against a better South Carolina defense. So South Carolina, or a better South Carolina offense. So South Carolina's going to put up some points, you would think. And then on the other end, Missouri's got a really good offense, and you're thinking, well, South Carolina's got a better defense than Missouri State, surely. So, okay, well, Missouri's got a better offense than NC State, probably. So there's just so many factors you're thinking about here, how high scoring of a game it is. South Carolina last week didn't just line up on offense and go down and beat NC State. They had some things go their way, played pretty good defense. Opening kick, Debo Samuel took the opening kick to the house. I think NC State outgained them. I'm pretty sure NC State outgained and outplayed South Carolina late in that game. South Carolina did enough to pull it off. That being said, with an NC State team that had all these expectations picked as everybody's sleeper to go out in week one, you know they were playing a little tight, but they had a lot to play for. Missouri has been the bottom of the SEC. I mean, they did win the East twice, but it's the East. I mean, well, what is the SEC East compared to the rest of football? It's really not much. So, but ever since then, they've been towards the bottom. They were the team I think I picked second to finish second to last in the East. So I'm going to stick with that trend. I'm going to go with South Carolina here. I think Bentley, who should be a true freshman this year, growing up really fast, I think he's going to pick that Missouri defense apart. I do think it's going to be a high-scoring football game. Drew Locke looked really good last week. But I just don't think they're going to get a lot of these blown assignments from South Carolina's defense that they did from Missouri State last week. Give me South Carolina. That is the big sneaky game to watch. Unfortunately, that one's at 6 o'clock, too. So there's so many big football games you have to. If you've got 7 TVs, use them, all of them, because you're going to need them. All right, the next game, let's go to Fayetteville. Let's go with TCU and Arkansas. Both coming in 1-0. Kenny Hill played in the SEC for half a season at A&M. At TCU, had a good year last year. Really never cost them games like I thought he would. He played pretty well last year. He put them in position, kind of like Patrick Mahomes, put them in position in spite of the rest of the team's performance at times. This one has a lot of revenge factor to it because last year Arkansas was up 20-7 going into the fourth quarter in this one. And TCU came storming back, scored 21 in the fourth quarter. And then Arkansas scored a late touchdown with a two-point conversion to force overtime. And Arkansas won 41-38 in OT. Very good game. Kenny Hill had 93 rushing yards and two touchdowns. He can beat you on the ground. He was 36 of 56 passing, so they threw the ball a lot with a touchdown and an interception. And on the other end, Austin Allen had a really good, efficient game. He was 17 of 29, three touchdowns, no picks. The running at 180 yards rushing for Arkansas. So I expect to see a lot of the same. Gary Patterson kind of used to pride himself on defense at TCU. In the Big 12, you kind of have to throw that away. I mean, you have to expect points, and you have to expect to outscore people as well. So you got to put the athletes out there on the field. I really think this is going to be a high-scoring game. Probably something really close to this score in regulation, maybe. Give me TCU. I'm going to say TCU on the road pays back Arkansas and takes them down. And both guys are playing very well so far this year. Austin Allen already, he was 14 and 19 last week, touchdown and an interception. Kenny Hill threw four touchdowns and a pick. But again, who are we really playing? I just think they're fine-tuned up and ready. Gary Patterson's a coach who's going to be able to get you ready for a game. And it's a game against the SEC. So although Arkansas is not ranked, that's a big game when you're outside of the SEC and the ACC. And you're trying to, you know, especially after the Big 12, Liberty beat Baylor last week and Texas lost to Maryland. The Big 12 has to make a name for itself, and it can start with this game right here. Give me TCU.
Well, like you said, this game last year was really good. It was a thriller, double overtime, really kind of ended up in a shootout kind of game. Really, really exciting. And Arkansas being at home this time, I'm going to go with Arkansas. I think Austin Allen's going to have a big game. Now, they're going to miss Raleigh Williams, but they're going to find somebody to give the ball to in this game. They're going to do it a little bit more by committee, but I think Allen is going to manage the game well. He's going to make a lot of throws. I think Kenny Hill makes a couple of bad decisions, throws a couple of picks, which cost him late. But you're right, I think this game goes right down to the wire. A lot of points, a lot of exciting plays, but I'm going to go the other way. I got the Hogs at home getting a big win.
Well, certainly. I mean, do you see it being as close as I do? I mean, I'm sure it's going to be a really close game.
No, I think the spread's only 3 points, so I think that there's a good chance that gets broken. If TCU wins, but I'm going to go Arkansas. I got a feeling about Arkansas in this game, and like I said, I think it's going to be fantastic, though. Fantastic game to watch.
Now, if you guys are paying attention on Facebook Live, the app, radio, however you guys want to pay attention, these picks have nothing to do with our weekly totals. It has nothing to do with that. When we pick the SEC games, we keep track of it, but it doesn't go against our record. Mine and Aaron's record will be on the big games of the week, the big ranked matchups that we'll be picking later. That's why we have not picked the Georgia-Notre Dame game yet. That's why we have not picked Auburn-Clemson yet. We're going to get into that in the next hour. If you guys want to jump in and make your picks, do it on Facebook Live. Do it at Twitter, at TonyMacUMP, at TonyMacTriplet, at ATripTennis. If save you some time from remembering all that, go to TonyMacTriplet on Twitter, and our Twitter handles are in the bio. You can just click on them and follow us there, and give us your picks. And I'll tell you the games we will be picking now. The big games we're going to be picking: Boise State at Washington State. I like that game, so I'll put that one in here. Georgia Notre Dame, Stanford USC, Auburn Clemson, Oklahoma Ohio State. We're not picking against the spread. We're picking straight up. We can mention the spread if we'd like. I've been really interested in that this year, but we're picking them straight up. Last week, we'll get into who won last week. We'll get into all of that, but get your picks in with us before we jump in on all of these things. That's going to do it for the first hour. When we come back, that's right, we're setting you up for college football kickoff. We're giving you our picks. We're breaking down these games. That starts right here. Tony Mack and the Triplet, Sports Radio 730, 103.9, The Ump.
It's Tony Mack and the Triplet with your hosts Antonio McBeth and Aaron Triplet, specializing in the world of sports.
I think they're the best team in the country.
Covering your favorite teams. Talking about whatever the hell they want.
Because he's a good coach. The good talent wants to play for him.
Absolutely not. This is ridiculous.
Now, here they are. Tony Mack and the Triplet.
Welcome back in. Hour number two. Tony Mack and the Triplet. You missed the first hour. Number one. I hate it for you. It was a great first hour.
Shame on you.
Absolutely shame. Shame on you. Shame on dishonor on your whole family. Dishonor on you, your cow. We've done everything else. Why not quote Disney movies? But we talked about roller coasters. We talked about football. We talked about crying Jordan faces. We did a lot of stuff in the first hour. This hour is going to be a lot more simple. It's going to be straight football. We're going to get into our big games of the week. We're going to pick these suckers here and get you ready for a great kickoff. Last week, get my sheet of paper here. Last week, we picked the Michigan-Florida game, Alabama-Florida State, UCLA-Texas A&M, West Virginia-Virginia Tech, Georgia Tech-Tennessee. Let me run through these here. Michigan, Florida. Me and Aaron. Who'd you pick?
I went Michigan.
That would be correct, sir. We got that one right. Alabama, Florida State. We both picked Alabama. I picked it 34-17, and it was 24-7. I got the margin.
You got the margin right.
UCLA, A&M. Okay, time out. Let's go ahead and stop right there. Let's talk about this one. UCLA, Texas A&M. We picked UCLA.
We won.
Well, yes. But trust me, when we picked UCLA, we had a lot more confidence that the game would not turn out like that.
We had a lot more confidence than we did about midway through the fourth quarter.
Now, let me tell you something, and it was the perfect summary of this game. I tweeted it out afterwards. I wanted to make sure it went final so I didn't jinx UCLA winning. I didn't want to jinx them winning the game. First half, the summary of that game, if you missed that game, this is all you need to know. The first half, Jim Morris fired. Done. He's gone. The second half, Kevin Sumlin's out. He's out the door. He's gone. Fire Sumlin. Because they had a 44-10 lead with two minutes to go in the third quarter. And the Chosen Rosen leads this team back and takes home a victory. And if you watch this game, you knew it was coming. You knew it was coming. When they cracked 31, when it got to 44-31, you're thinking, UCLA's got it. You're going through your mind. You're sitting there getting your scenarios ready. Well, if they get the ball back right here, they're going to win this game. When they got the ball back and they're marching down the field before they scored to make it 44-38, right before they scored, like three or four plays before, I said out loud, I was walking around my other job, Texas Roadhouse. I don't work there anymore. But I was walking around there, and I looked, and I said, if they score here, UCLA wins this game. It's over. And they're like, really, you think so? There's still like 5 minutes to go, and they have to get the ball back again. I'm telling you right now, it's 44-10. If they score here, they're winning this game, because it's not just the fact that Texas A&M couldn't stop me and Aaron out there running the football right now, or playing football right now. Josh Rosen could have thrown a touchdown pass to me in the fourth quarter. The fact that Texas A&M ran the ball so successfully with who was the main back? Keith Ford was one of them. I can't remember the main back, escapes my mind right now. But between Keith Ford and this other A&M running back, dominated on the ground. And in the fourth quarter, when the other team's making one of the greatest comebacks in college football, you're helping them out by throwing the football.
Not giving it to Travion Williams, who ran for 200 yards. But is it 200? Did he run for 200 yards?
I'm sure he ran for more than that. Between him and Keith Ford, they ran for damn near 300, if not more than that. But my point is, You've got backs like that that have absolutely just dominated this game.
And you quit giving them the ball. And
when the other team's coming back.
That's on the coaches. That's bad coaching. When you've got guys who are dominating and taking over the game, and you choose not to give them the ball at the end of the game, and it ends up costing you because you're trying to throw the ball.
Aaron, here's my point. You didn't just not give him the ball at the end of the game. You didn't give him the ball the whole fourth quarter. The whole fourth quarter. It's still 44 to like 17.
He did run for 200 yards. He ran for 203, it says.
And you didn't give him the whole fourth quarter. It's not just at the end of the game. Okay, well, now it's a two-score game or it's a one-score game. Let's bleed this clock. You had a chance to bleed the clock the entire fourth quarter, and you didn't do it. Did he even get a handoff? More than two? No. Here's the 22 carries for Travion Williams. 9 yards per attempt. If you need a first down to seal the game or to start forcing A&M to use timeouts, 9 yards to carry right there. Nine. Right behind that, Keith Ford, an old back that used to play at Oklahoma. 18 carries, 114 yards. They ran for 382. Between those two, they ran for 217 or 317.
To carry as a team.
And you stopped running the football. You gave UCLA more time because you were throwing it. Incompletions here and incompletion there, getting out of bounds to the sideline here. You gave that game. Now, I'm not taking anything away from Josh Rosen. That fourth quarter, what was he, like 22 of 26, 296, four touchdowns? He did his part. He played, you know, the bulletproof Superman out there and did his part. But A&M, you didn't do your part. Coach Sumlin, you didn't do your part. You didn't play smart. It's not just that you blew a 34-point lead.
Up 28 points in the fourth quarter.
It's not just that you did that. It's how you did it. It's one thing if the other guy on the other side of the football starts clicking and it's hard to stop him. And you're responsible, of course, because your defense is out there, but they can understand that. Wow, that guy was hard to stop. Did you see that throw here? Look at the play he made there with his legs. Really smart job by Rosen here. We get that. That's understandable. But by the fact that you were doing them favors You were doing them favors by throwing the football and not running this clock out? That's on you, man. The fact that you're not fired, the fact that you still have a job right now is unreal. And let's talk about other mismanaging the situations. People like to talk about Les Miles when he was at LSU and how his clock management at times was terrible. Let's talk about number one, someone not running the football in the entire fourth quarter. How about Butch Jones in the Georgia Tech game? If we're going to talk about the SEC and coaches that should be fired, Butch Jones is an athletic director away from being fired. The fact that their athletic director didn't want to make that decision on his way out the door is the sole reason this man still has a job. If they don't win 9 regular season games this year, you're gone. You should be.
There's no way he wins. There's just no way Tennessee wins 9 games with the way their defense
what we saw
was carved up completely by the triple option by Georgia Tech. And yes, that's a tough offense to stop. But they gave up like 600 rushing yards.
What we saw on Monday was a 7-5 team in Tennessee get absolutely dominated by another 7-5 team in Georgia Tech and then come back and pull that one out of their butt. Now, you got to give it to Tennessee. The resiliency they had to come back and win that game is amazing.
They didn't turn the ball over, and Georgia Tech turned it over twice, and it turned into 14 points.
And the missed field goals killed them.
Yeah, and John Kelly, the running back of Tennessee, he's a ball player. But other than him, and they leaned on him a lot, and they're going to lean on him a lot this season, they're just not impressive. They're not impressive on the defensive side of the ball. Dormandy's not impressive. They lost Jawan Jennings during the game to an injury. They're going to rely way too much on. I mean, they got the time of possession. Did you just see that?
44 minutes.
44-18.
Oh, yeah, it was unreal.
And, I mean, John Kelly he carried the ball 19 times for 128. He averaged almost 7 yards a carry and scored 4 times. John Kelly, like I said, ball player. But Dormandy, 20 of 37. I mean, his numbers actually looked better, but he started pitiful.
Yeah.
I mean, he went 20 of 37, 221, and 2 scores. That's actually pretty good. But he started pretty pitiful. But he's not he himself is not impressive. And I felt the most for Taquan Marshall, who carried for 249 yards and 5 touchdowns.
The quarterback for Georgia Tech carried the ball 44 times.
Put the team on his back and had a really good game. And if somebody doesn't miss a block on that 2-point conversion, I mean, he's walking into the end zone.
Unfortunately, he had a chance to walk in the end zone. He missed his read. He missed his pitch read. If he pitches it to the outside, they've got the outside sealed. He walks into the end zone.
Defended it pretty well, too. But that's the only defensive play they decided to show up all night was the one that mattered.
Well,
but
the thing I'm trying to say is the quarterback, he
could have pitched it out.
He tried to carry it. Had he pitched it, the pitch was there. That's ball game if he pitches it. But it's hard to hate on this kid and one. I don't even want to say that, even though it's true. I don't even want to say that because of what he did in this game.
And a lot could go wrong when you pitch the ball. There's a lot of things that can go wrong, and that's a 2-point conversion.
But that's part of your offense, though, when you're Georgia
Tech.
It
is, and you got to. And he tried to cut it up, and he tried to make the safer play, and Tennessee was over it. And like I said, somebody missed a block, and he didn't make the best read. I was actually kind of surprised that he went for it there and didn't wait for the third overtime, whether you have to go for two. Because, I mean, Tennessee wasn't going to stop them. They weren't stopping Tennessee at that point either. But I might have waited. But I think he wanted to go while he was on the bottom of the overtime and had a chance to, you know, close it out. But Tennessee lucky to escape with that win when they got completely outplayed for more than 4 quarters of football and somehow ended up with a win. But at the same time, I had an old coach tell me this week at the lunch table. He used to coach football, out of coaching now. He said, well, you know, for the longest time, you know, to win football games, you know, all you got to do is, the secret to it is right here. If you score more points than the other team at the end of the game, you win.
100% of the time.
100% of the time.
Now, back to the point I was making about Butch Jones in Tennessee, if you're going to dog on someone for what he did and mismanaging time in the fourth quarter, Butch Jones in that game, although Georgia Tech got that field goal blocked at the end of the game, Butch Jones is the reason they had that attempt in the first place. They have no time. Georgia Tech has 0 timeouts, about 25 seconds left on the clock, 0 timeouts, and the shot clock, the play clock's starting to run down on them. They're about to get a penalty, and Butch Jones calls a timeout. Butch Jones called a timeout for Georgia Tech.
And it wouldn't have mattered anyway because he was, oh, we got to call a timeout to make some defensive adjustments. What adjustments? There was nothing to be done. You weren't going to stop them anyway, and they were about to hurt themselves. That's terrible, terrible.
Someone needs to pick him up and dunk him in the trash can. Dunk him in their turnover trash can they have. Butch Jones' problem, number one, was that awful, awful play time management there. But also, the fact that last year, towards the end of the year, teams like Vanderbilt, Missouri, started to carve up that defense. That defense started to really show its weakness. One, they have injury problems all over the place. But they have not fixed that. They have not fixed their run defense. As you can tell, Georgia Tech ran the ball for 535 yards on Tennessee. But Aaron and I both picked Georgia Tech in that game, lost that one. And the one we picked against each other, West Virginia, Virginia Tech, came down to literally the last play that could have forced overtime.
Like I knew it would. I called that game was going to be. It wasn't as good as Georgia Tech, Tennessee, but I called West Virginia, Virginia Tech being the best game of the weekend. It was fantastic.
And Virginia Tech ends up pulling that one out, stopping West Virginia there at the end of the game. And Aaron leads 4-1. He went 4-1, and I went 3-2 this week. But we're going to change that. We're going to change that this week, getting into these ball games. But so you think that the Georgia Tech Tennessee game was the best game of last week? Is that what I was just saying?
I think it was. I mean, double overtime, can't get much better than that.
It was really good. But I think just wire to wire, like a game that would hold your interest from beginning to end was West Virginia, Virginia Tech.
What I said, I thought it was. It lived up to what I thought it was going to be.
That game, I don't think ever got more than a one possession game, and West Virginia looked like they were controlling it at times, and then Virginia Tech came back and took a lead late. And West Virginia goes down with, and literally as the time's expiring, Will Greer throws an incompletion in the end zone. Wouldn't have mattered. There was a penalty up front on West Virginia anyway. But it legitimately came down to the last, a game that went wire to wire, a game that was one mistake will kill you all night long, came down to the last play. And that's what we wanted. And that's not a game anybody's talking about because Georgia Tech blew a lead. A&M blew a lead. And they're SEC teams. And that's drawing everybody's attention back to the SEC, which I get it. I live in the South. The SEC is a great conference. They don't need any more attention. Pay attention to the actual good football. Like, we're talking about the, think about why we're talking about these games. We're talking about A&M because they blew a 33-point lead, 34-point lead. We're talking about Tennessee because they came back and won in a game they allowed 500 yards on the ground. That's not good football. That's resilient football by UCLA and by Tennessee to come back and pull something amazing. And it's wild and wacky, but doesn't necessarily mean it was great football. It was entertainment is what that was. It was entertainment. If you want great football, you should have watched that West Virginia-Virginia Tech game because it was a chess match the entire night. Luckily for me, I was at work, like I mentioned, at Texas Roadhouse, and I had the games on dual TVs, one right next to the other. So I was able to watch them both, and all night long, obviously, the more interesting game was Virginia Tech, West Virginia, because it was a good game all night long. I literally had them in side-by-side comparison. And then A&M got more interesting because UCLA came back. Entertainment beat out football, which I get. I get. I'm all into entertainment as well. But when you're sitting there talking about this week was great because the SEC teams were involved and it was great football, no, they were. The SEC teams this week were more entertaining. It doesn't necessarily – because think about the games you're talking about. Sure, Alabama's a great football team. Auburn could have done better. But think about the bulk of the SEC that you're talking about. Missouri gave up 43 points to Missouri State. Texas A&M blew a 34-point lead. That's not great football going on. That's just entertainment. And I'm okay with that. If you want to call it entertainment, I was more entertained by this game, so I watched it. I'm okay with that. But don't say it was better football. Because the SEC as a whole did not play better football. Florida got dominated this week. They did not play better football than some of these other programs out there.
I will say this. I called Florida not scoring an offensive touchdown, which they didn't. They scored two. They had two pick sixes and a field goal. So I called them not scoring. They scored more times on defense than I thought they would.
Talk about that for a second. Talk about Wilton Spate and the job he did. I mean, obviously not perfect, threw back-to-back pick sixes. But if you're going to talk about resiliency in a football game, you're talking about a team that comes back from being 34 down. That's resiliency. That's great to keep your head in that game. And you're talking about a team that allowed 500 yards on the ground and came back and won. That's great. That's big picture. But look at Wilton Spate. You're in a close ball game. The reason Florida is up 17-10 is quite literally your fault. You've thrown back-to-back pick sixes. And the only reason Florida is in this game and has a lead is because of you. And you're resilient enough to lead them back down your team back down the field into a dominant fashion to win this football game. That was one hell of a performance by Wilton Spate. A guy that I've been dogging on. Still don't think he's great. But that was one hell of a performance by Wilton Spate. If we're going to talk about resiliency, he has to be thrown in the conversation for that. Two pick sixes back to back. Comes back and wins the game. And for Michigan, ironically enough, it happened to be a scoop and score for them that sealed the game. But we're going to take a quick break. That's where our record stands, 4-1 Aaron, 3-2 me. When we get back, promise you, making our picks next. Tony Mack and the Triplett, Sports Radio, 730, 103.9, The Ump. Welcome back, Tony Mack and the Triplett. Before we get to our picks, really quick, good friend of the show, just good friend in general, Drew Hall, if you remember, used to have his own show here as well, won the Kickstart Your Career competition. Let's go ahead and get this bad boy in here real quick. I haven't talked to him in a while. Drew, man, welcome in. What's going on, buddy?
Tony Mack, the living legend. What is going on, brother?
What's up, man? How are you doing?
Man, I'm doing great. Just got done with the lift this morning. Got in late last night. I'm doing the scoreboard show up here in Northeast Alabama. So doing all the high school scores, having fun with that. You know, making it as electric as possible.
Always, man. Well, hey, real quick, where you called at the right time. Aaron and I are about to get our picks in. We pick, like, big games of the week. We've already done our SEC picks. We're picking the big games of the week. You want to get in here on this one?
Throw them at me, man. I can give you what I got. Hey, I'm just throwing this out there, Tony Mack. On air last week, I called Bama by 17.
I did too. I did. I picked it 34-17, but I did pick them by 17, so I'm right there with you.
Well, I mean, listen, you had a lot of time to learn from me.
Well,
I take half credit for this.
Well, I guess learn I did. All right, we're going to start with Georgia at Notre Dame. Who you got?
I'm going to take Georgia.
Okay, interesting.
Even with a freshman quarterback, I'm taking Georgia. I think Notre Dame's got a long way to go, and I really think this is Brian Kelly's last year.
Well, I could agree with you there, but especially about the freshman quarterback in Fromm. He's got a lot of poise to him for a young guy. Stanford, USC.
Stanford, man.
Okay, look at Drew over here.
It's not even – it'll be a semi-close game. I'm going Stanford by 10.
Okay. Auburn at Clemson. I know where this one's going.
Listen, this is a 5-point game, okay? And here's the deal. If – Jared Stidham shows up like Jared Stidham did in the Big 12, you know, the major flag football league in America, Auburn's going to win. But he's going to have to throw the ball vertically. He's going to have to stretch the field with his arm because he can't do it with his legs. I know they said he's an athlete, and he is. He's a pretty good athlete, but he's not Cam Newton. He's not Nick Marshall. He's not going to bust a 15-yard run from you by, you know, getting past linebackers. He's going to get his three and slide down, and that's doesn't make Auburn's offense go. So if he doesn't stretch the field vertically, I think it's going to be Clemson by, I would say, 9 points.
Okay. And Oklahoma going to Ohio State.
Listen, you're going to love this one, Tony Mack.
Okay.
I'm going Oklahoma.
Wow. I'm going
Oklahoma. And here's why. Because Ohio State is a good team, not knocking them. And listen, to anybody listening right now, if you want to get Tony Mack fired up, call in and say that Urban Meyer is nowhere near Nick Saban. And you will have an hour's worth of argument on your hands.
It's true.
I've been a part of that argument. I'm just saying, just make sure you buckle in and get ready for it.
It's true.
Baker Mayfield, the way he runs from college, I think he can avoid that Ohio State defense, and I think they pull off an upset.
Well, I do love that one. Before we let you go, Drew, I want to get your take on your Crimson Tide going against Florida State and what you think about them going forward. How do you feel like Alabama look going forward into this schedule? How do you think they're going to finish up?
Well, the schedule's easy as can be. I mean, they don't have another game. I thought Texas A&M might be kind of tough when y'all watched the first half of that UCLA-Texas A&M game, and then I watched the second half, and I was like, nah, same old Texas A&M. But here's the thing. I really expected more out of Jalen. And listening to the Alabama faithful, they're like, oh, this is just the vanilla Alabama. You know, this is just the same old we do every year. And I was like, yeah, but I really expected more. And I know he was under duress, but I really wanted to see him step up in the pocket and make throws and do the same thing like I was talking about with Stidham. He's got to stretch the field vertically with his arm. He can't outrun everybody, and they're just loading us up at the line of scrimmage. And Alabama was not beating anybody over the top, and that's what they're going to have to do when they play top-tier defenses like Florida State had. So Bama is going to have to improve to keep winning. Now, I'm not going to say that they're not going to win. I think their next challenge is LSU, and that's just because it's always a rivalry game, and then you got Auburn at the end of the year, and that's it. You know, after watching Tennessee in the trash can defense, I'm not scared about that game at all. But the big thing is how Jalen develops as a quarterback, and can they win the big games? Now, I don't know if there's another Deshaun Watson out there, if there's another Cam Newton out there, and that's really been the only thing that has stopped Alabama is that X factor at quarterback. If that's not out there, it may not even matter. But if it is, Jalen is going to have to develop as a passer.
That's a good point. Drew, thank you so much for calling, buddy. The only reason I didn't throw all my picks out there with you and agree or disagree with you is because we're about to make our picks, and I didn't want to give anything away. But if you listen, you're going to hear a lot of similarities, buddy.
Tony Mack, I'm proud as heck of you, man. You're doing a heck of a job. Keep doing what you're doing, brother. I'll talk to you later, man.
I appreciate it, man. Take it easy, Drew. Drew Hall, good friend of the show. Good friend. You haven't had the pleasure of meeting Drew Hall, but this man has the most energy you'll ever see in your entire life.
He sounds pretty high energy.
He is the definition.
As our friend Jordan repeats the word high energy like that in the background if he's listening.
Drew Hall is the definition of the exact opposite of Aaron Triplett. I'm kidding. He's like a walking Red Bull. But all right, Aaron. He got into some interesting picks. Let's start it off. I didn't throw him this one just because it's just kind of a guilty pleasure. One I wanted in here. I'm going to start with you. Boise State, Washington State. By the time I wrote this down, it was like an 8.5-point spread for Washington State. I don't know the spread now.
It jumped up to 10, I think, towards Washington State.
Who do you like? Do you like Washington State at home, or do you like Boise State?
When I saw it, I really, really, really wanted to take Boise State. But they're on the road. Luke Falk is about 40 years old and has been at Washington State since I was a child. At least that's what it feels like. He's one of those eternal quarterbacks, because you get those every now and then where you have a quarterback who just – or a player, but most of the time it's quarterbacks that you just feel like, man, he's still there. That's what Luke Falk feels like right now at Washington State. But I'm going to take him, and I'm going to take the Cougars to win this game. But it's not going to be by 10 points. It's going to be very close, and I think it's going to be – back and forth, really interesting Pac-12 after dark game, but I'm taking the Cougars in a close one over the Broncos.
Yeah, I kind of figured that this one would be a tough one for you, because picking Boise State in somewhat of a high-profile game is almost a necessity, because they always seem to – like a few years ago, back in 2014, and not a season I watched the most football, it was a down point for me, but I didn't know much about Brian Harsin's Boise State team, but – I picked him to win the Fiesta Bowl just because it was Boise State in a big game, and they beat Arizona. So
Brett Rypien can really he can really sling the ball. They got experience at quarterback. I think they're going to be just fine. They're going to win 9 games again, but this one's going to be tough, and they're on the road. If this was at home in Boise on the blue turf, I'd probably take Boise State at home, but on the road it's going to be tougher. But I'm going to take Washington State in a very close game.
Yeah, I'm taking Washington State as well here, and that's mainly because of the experience of Luke Falk. Now, something that Boise State's been able to do, they've been able to stifle you with their experience as well. Even back when Chris Peterson was there, he had a really good poised quarterback that knew how to make smart plays. They never really shot themselves in the foot. And on the other side, Chris Peterson knew how to dial up defense, and Brian Harsin's done the same thing, dial up pressure on that quarterback and make him second-guess himself. Luke Falk, I don't think you're going to get that out of him. He's always been a very efficient guy at Washington State, and this year's no different so far. But, I mean, his career completion percentage is almost 70%. It's a guy that knows how to make good decisions. It's an offense that will keep you on your toes. It's an offense that's going to put the pressure on you, because you're going to get a lot of fast looks. It's Mike Leach. He's a genius. He's an offensive genius. Hal Mumme had the right idea by bringing him on to Kentucky, and Bob Stoops brought him into the Big 12, and then you see what they're doing over there. offense like this is almost impossible to stop. You have to pretty much be an offense like that yourself. You have to stop them with your own offense. So I'm going with Washington State as well. The next one up, it gets harder from here. It gets a lot harder to pick these games from here because next we're going Georgia-Notre Dame. Georgia-Notre-freaking-Dame.
Well, in this game, I'm looking at a couple things. One, it's really dependent on Jake Fromm to see how well he will do playing on the road in a tough environment. The spread is Notre Dame by 5, which I think it opened at 6.5, and it's got down to 5. That's really surprising to me because Georgia is, I mean, it's an SEC team going on the road, I know, but Notre Dame, like, what does Notre Dame have? Who do they have right now? Nobody. They're, and I agreed with what Drew said. It's Brian Kelly's last year. They're not a very good team. I saw an article that ESPN had the other day that said, when did Notre Dame become so average? And I was like, when they hired Brian Kelly. I mean, they were terrible for the last year under Charlie Weiss, but when they hired Brian Kelly, they admitted to being they surrendered to just being average. They're just another face in the crowd now. I like Georgia. I'm just going to go ahead and say it. I like Georgia going on the road. I think Fromm's going to play well. They're going to run the football. Chubb and Michelle, that tandem is going to run all over this Notre Dame defense. And Georgia's defense is going to play – if they play well, I could see Georgia blowing this game open if they run the ball effectively and play good defense. Fromm might not even have to make a couple of big throws. I think Georgia's going to win this game.
Well, I knew I was going to end up saying it today, Aaron.
You done messed up, Aaron!
I'm going Notre Dame in this one because of this rushing attack that they have. Let's play that again. Hold on. You pick Georgia.
You done messed up, Aaron!
I love this clip. Love this. You messed up. I hope, at least. I'm going Notre Dame here because of this rushing attack. They ran. It was Temple. Temple's been okay the past few years. They don't have Matt Rhule anymore there, but ran for 422 yards on the ground last week. A lot of that has to do with the probably next to Oklahoma best offensive line in the country. They have a fantastic line there. Georgia, they're gonna bring the same attack with Michelle and everything. And I know that a freshman quarterback went in and beat Notre Dame last year. I just don't know. I don't see it happening again. Fromm is very poised for a young guy, but I think he's gonna on the road. This is gonna be a hostile place to play. It's gonna be night and Notre Dame. So I think he's going to see things. He's going to have to grow up really, really quick. He's going to see some things come at him that he's not going to have time to process. And I do think it's close, though, because I just think that Georgia is just as talented, more talented than Notre Dame, probably. Wimbush, I didn't like everything I saw out of him, but I think this running game is going to keep Notre Dame in it and the home crowd. So give me the Fighting Irish in this one. Now, because I have to play this clip every time you do the wrong thing and pick against me, I need you to go first for it to work. So, again, I'm going to ask you, Stanford on the road, USC, who you got?
Well, USC opened up against Western Michigan. They struggled. Darnold didn't play very good. Ronald Jones had a really big day. I think for USC to win this game, they're going to have to run the ball effectively, and their defense is going to have to play lights out. And their defense was shaky against Western Michigan. Gave up a lot of points, a lot of yards. I'm skeptically going with USC here. I think that it's going to be a closer game than people think. USC definitely on upset alert. Stanford is definitely going to give them a run for their money in this game. But I'm going to take USC. I think Darnold makes the plays. He executes. If he executes the offense the way that a lot of people believe that he can and has the ability to, then I think that they can, that they're going to have, that it's going to be very difficult for Stanford to stop him playing really well. And I think Keller Christ, if they want to win, he's going to have to be almost perfect to win the game. So I'm going to take USC. I think Ronald Jones is going to control the game. If Darnold limits the picks, which he threw 2 last week, if those changes those into touchdowns and Jones carries the ball well, I think USC will win this game. They're at home. The last time they played Stanford at home, they lost with Cody Kessler at quarterback. But I got USC this time Hopefully they don't let me down, because I started to kind of – I mean, I bought out of them at the last minute, but I do hope that they can that they win this game, because I think Darnold will play well. If he plays well and Ronald Jones controls the game on the ground, I think the USC will win.
You done messed up, A.A. Ron!
Didn't see that one coming.
Yet again, I'm going with Stanford here on the road. A place, sure, you're going on the road to USC, a place they've won three out of the last four times they've played, I believe. Early in the season, they seem to have USC's number as well. When they play first 3 weeks of the season, they have a really good record against USC in the last six, 7 years. Also, Stanford on the ground last week was freaking phenomenal. Again, another great offensive line. When you talk about offensive line in the running game, it controls. You control the line of scrimmage with the running game. It gives your quarterback a lot more confidence. He's going to have a lot more time to throw, or at least he thinks he does. He doesn't have to worry about the pressure coming because he sees how well the offensive line is working. So I think that helps. USC, though, don't get me wrong, I think this is going to be a very good game. And I hate that Western Michigan kept it that close last week because I was going to pick Stanford anyway. I think that's going to get USC a little more ready for this game. But they have some weapons I like. Sam Darnold, I don't expect to have a performance like he did last week. Didn't throw a touchdown, threw two interceptions. But you got guys like Ronald Jones, their running back, 159 yards on the ground, three touchdowns. Man's a monster. The man is a beast. And then Deontay Burnett looked fantastic out there as well. Seven catches, 142 yards. So Stanford's gonna have to get pressure to win this one. But offensively, I think they're going to be able to do enough. I think David Shaw is comfortable with beating USC, to be honest with you. I mean, I think all the pressure's on USC in this football game because if Stanford loses, people will see this as this is a kind of a stepping stone, a building stone. USC, as high as they are ranked right now, and with the expectations some people have for them to win the Pac-12 and go to the playoff, all the pressure is on them at home right now. So whenever they make a mistake, they start to think about it a lot more. And they start thinking about mistakes before they happen because they feel like they have to be perfect after the performance they had last week. I think all that's going to play an important role, and I think Stanford's going to go on the road and win. So we have two times that you've already messed up and picked against me. Let's go. And I say that very boldly because you're already leading.
As for the more intrigue.
Yeah, we're already leading, so I say that boldly. But we're going to go on next. I already know who you're going to pick because you're an Auburn fan, which obviously means you're not going to pick Auburn. Auburn on the road, the ACC's version of Death Valley. The Tigers clash tonight. Who you got?
Well, night game in Death Valley. Last time that Auburn went to the ACC's version of Death Valley, it was in 2011, the year after they won the national championship game, and they hung around for a half, but Taj Boyd ended up, and Clemson ended up pulling away in the second half. That was Sammy Watkins had a big game in that one, and that was during the middle of the day. I think that was an 11 o'clock kick. This one's a night game, so going a night game to Clemson's Death Valley, and the atmosphere is going to be great because Clemson's version of Death Valley provides some of the best college football atmosphere, at least from a viewer's perspective on television, some of the best. It's really hard to beat a night game at Clemson, at least on the television, like I'm saying. So it's going to be great. For Auburn to win this game, Jared Stidham's going to have to play better. He did not have a great game against Georgia Southern. Threw a couple picks, threw a touchdown. I think he might have only thrown one interception, but he threw one interception, one touchdown, threw for 100-something yards. He's going to have to be more efficient. They're going to miss Kerryon Johnson, who has been extremely injury-prone since he got to Auburn. But Cameron Petway comes back this week. He's going to have to be big. What they're going to miss from Johnson is his pass-catching ability out of the backfield. Petway not as good of a receiving back. But Stidham's going to have to step up and make some throws. I think if he steps up and makes some throws, they're going to have a chance late. The defense, though, was the most impressive part of last week's game. They were lights out. The only touchdown that Auburn gave up was by the offense. Stidham fumbled, and Georgia Southern picked it up and scored. So defense is going to have to play exceptional again, which I think that they're going to play well. Kelly Bryant's going to be a handful for them to deal with, but I think that they'll come play well. I think this game is a very good football game. It comes right down to the wire. I think it's going to be coming down to the last possession. I think that that what's going to happen is Stidham's going to get the ball. He's going to have to drive down. They're going to have to score a touchdown. I think they will. I think they'll go up late. And then Clemson will get the ball, march all the way down and be gunning for the end zone. But Auburn's defense, which has played pretty well the whole game, plays bend but don't break on the last possession, gets a stop for the upset. I'm going to take my Auburn Tigers reluctantly, but again, optimistically in this game because I really want them to pull out this big win. So War Eagle, give me Auburn in this one.
Well, Aaron, you know what happens when you pick against me, right? I have to go to the soundboard. I'm not going to do that because I've said all year long, before the season, I like Auburn. I like Auburn's chances to go on the road and beat this Clemson team. Clemson looks a lot better than I expected him to. Really no rust. They did play Kent State. Kelly Bryant did look pretty good. He has a very accurate arm. He threw a pick. Deion Kane is a threat. He is a problem, as I thought. But this Auburn defense really doesn't look like it's skipped a beat. They got a lot of pressure stopping a very good triple option team. And while they don't have the personnel they had a few years ago there, it's still a triple option team. It's a Georgia Southern triple option that ran for over 300 yards on Alabama 1 year. So it's just that system that's hard to stop. And they have, obviously, you got Marlon Davidson as a defensive end that's going to be a big name. But there's this guy, I believe his name, first name's Nick, I think. But his name, Nick Coe, I think is his name. Nick Coe. Last week, he got into the backfield on a triple option play. He stopped the dive. He read the quarterback. He stopped the fake dive. He read the quarterback bouncing out. He chased the quarterback down, and the quarterback pitched it, and he made the tackle. He stopped all three phases of the triple option on one play. He stopped the dive, he stopped the quarterback, and he stopped the pitch, all on the same play. This guy's got playmaking ability. He's got big-time playmaking ability, so that whole defense has depth to it, I think. I think they're going to be able to get back there and cause problems. I don't think anybody really pulls away in this game. I think, like you said, it's going to be a very good, tight game. I think at times Clemson probably late is going to be able to start moving the ball a little bit. And it's going to add for a lot of intrigue. But I think they opened the playbook up. I don't think that we really saw a lot of the playbook last week. It was pretty vanilla. It looked like Gus Malzahn's offense last week. But Jared Stidham's got some rust, man. You've got to let him knock it off. And I'm not saying he's going to come out here and be perfect. I think you're going to see some of that rust this week. This is a hostile environment. I don't know in the four starts that he's had, he's seen an environment like this, because when they played Oklahoma, it was at home when he was a starter. So I don't really necessarily know that he's seen an environment like this. But luckily for them, they have their number one back in Petway coming back. I think he's going to be a little better catching out of the backfield than you think, because that's something that that the offensive coordinator has really worked on with both backs this year. He really wants to get both of them involved. So I think you'll see a lot more of that. I think he will be better in the backfield than you think. You get your, Kyle Davis, is that his name? You get your start.
Kyle Davis comes back. Probably the best, most talented receiver on the team.
I think Stidham will open it up. I think you're going to probably see a lot of stall drives at first, based on, Stidham still trying to find rhythm with the receiver. I think Petway's going to really carry at first. But I think Stidham opens up, and I think Auburn wins this football game. I'm like you. I think they go into the ACC's version of Death Valley, and the SEC Tigers win. One of the SEC Tigers pulls out the upset. Speaking of upsets, let's hope that trend continues. The last game of the week, the game day game. But we do need a break because we are very short on time really quick. We'll come back in the last segment, pick the last game of the week right here on Tony Mac and the Triplet, Sports Radio 730, 103.9, The Ump. I like the way you work it. No diggity. I thought to bag it up. Bag it up. I like the way you work it. No diggity. Welcome back, Tony Mac and the Triplet. Last segment of the show. We didn't forget. We didn't have time to pick one game, so we're going to get to it now. Hopefully I'll have a little time to work with this one. Aaron, Ohio State hosting Baker Mayfield in Oklahoma. Give me what you got.
Well, of course, if you remember this game from last year, Oklahoma and Ohio State went to Norman. Ohio State really pulled away. JT Barrett threw four touchdowns. They won 45-24. Oklahoma, of course, would not lose another game for the rest of the season. After opening with a loss to Houston and then the loss to Ohio State. But this time, Oklahoma and Baker Mayfield traveling to the Shoe to take on Ohio State. And Ohio State, after a really slow start against Indiana, really poured it on. Mike Weber didn't play for really an undisclosed – I don't really know why. I think he was hurt. But they just announced yesterday, I believe, that J.K. Dobbins is going to continue to start at running back. Dobbins had a really big game against Indiana. J.T. Barrett, I'm back and forth on JT Barrett. JT Barrett had a great season, his redshirt freshman season, when he got hurt. And then he got hurt at the end. And then, of course, Jones took over, won the national championship. And then 2 years ago, they had the – was it Jones or Barrett that's going to start? And he – neither of them were great. They ended up not making the playoff, lost to Michigan State. And then last year, you know, he was back and forth. Played really well at the beginning of the season, slowed up at the end of the season. And this year, kind of – I don't know what to really expect out of him. If he can step up and really, you know, lead this team, which he is a leader, but – I feel like he needs to have a little bit more fire, a little bit more energy, because in that game against Indiana, he kind of got – he was just being a little positive, not being, you know, real angry. He wasn't just really getting after it. So I'm really looking to see a little bit more out of him. I think we could find out a lot about him in this game. I think we find out a lot about Oklahoma, too. I think Oklahoma's got a lot to prove. I mean, yeah, they have Baker Mayfield, but they got a lot of other spots that really I think they need to show up and is going to have to play well. They don't have a lot of room for mistakes. Turnovers obviously decide a lot of games, and I think that's going to tell the tape here in this game. Whoever turns the ball over more times is going to lose. But I'm going to go with Ohio State because I think Ohio State overall, all around, offense, defense, special teams, is the better team overall. Oklahoma has the advantage at the quarterback position. But really, I like Ohio State's athletes. Their young corners are going to have to grow up because Mayfield's going to pick on them way more than the Indiana corners quarterback did last week. But they've had the extra days to prepare. I think they're going to be prepared. They're playing at home in front of the home crowd. I think they're going to be ready. I think it's going to be a very entertaining game, but I think Ohio State's defense steps up late. They make one or two plays. They run the football extremely effectively. Defense stepping up in the second half, and the rushing attack of Ohio State tells the story of this game. I like the Buckeyes at home.
You done messed up, A.A. Ron!
Oh, didn't see that one.
I'm going the opposite direction. I'm going Oklahoma. Last year, I picked Ohio – I'm not being a homer. Last year, I picked Ohio State to beat Oklahoma by 18 points. I did. I'm realistic here, but I don't have a lot of time, so I'm trying to speed through this. I'm going with Oklahoma, and I'll tell you why. They're not replacing really talent offensively. They're replacing experience in the running back group. They're replacing Joe Mixon, Samaje Perine. They're replacing them with four guys. They ran four running backs last week, and they all looked really good. You had Abdul Adams and Rodney Anderson being the co-starters, which we thought would happen. Rodney Anderson, probably the more talented guy. They all hit the hole really hard, really fast. Marcellus Sutton, a JUCO transfer, and I can't remember the other guy's name. I can't remember which freshman running back it was, but one of them got left out. So they're running four guys back there, plus they have Demetrius Flowers and a fullback. They've got a lot of running power back there. They're all going to be able to give you something different. They can all catch out of the backfield. So I think the talent there in the running backs, just fine. Receivers need to get themselves open more. They need to work themselves open more, but the bottom line is Oklahoma has the best and the most deep offensive line in the country. That's all there is to it. And this game last year is the reason Oklahoma has the most deep line in the country. Last year, two of the starters got hurt in this game. One of them out for the season, broke his leg. The other one was out and really lost his starting spot. Now they're backups. Ohio State propelled these backups into starters, and now the starters from last year are backups. So Ohio State is the reason Oklahoma's line is so deep. They want revenge in this game. Baker Mayfield definitely wants revenge in this game. At least I think it'll be close. Oklahoma's margin for error is zero. They can't shoot themselves in the foot with penalties or turnovers. And if they control and play a pretty clean game, they're going to win this football game. Ohio State's defensive line, they run five defensive ends sometimes on the same play. Best defensive line in the country going up against the best offensive line in the country. That's what you want to see, but I think Oklahoma's offensive line is going to be able to hold up. Something that Indiana showed to do is get the ball out quick, which Baker Mayfield can do. But the dangerous thing is if this offensive line gives him time to throw and he doesn't need to get the ball out fast, he's going to make you pay for it. This secondary is not the most talented. It's got the talent there, but they're wildly inexperienced. You saw that against Indiana last week. They didn't really have any big-time busted coverages. But a lot of one-on-one plays were won by the Indiana receivers. And I promise you this, while Oklahoma's receivers are a little inexperienced, they're talented. They'll be able to work themselves open. So I'm going Oklahoma. Aaron and I picked against each other three times. You hear the music. That means we got to get out of here. For Aaron Triplett, I'm Tony Mack. This is Tony Mack and the Triplett. Enjoy your football Saturday. Boomer Sooner. Sports Radio 730-1039, The Ump.